So namaste everyone. Today I'm going to talk about a new field within the cognitive sciences, which is called quantum cognition, which is actually a combination out of cognitive psychology on the one hand and the principles derived from quantum physics on the other hand, all right? The main idea is that you can use psychophysics experiments in order to test mathematical ideas derived from quantum physics. And we did a couple of experiments. And I will first of all give you an introduction about what quantum cognition actually is all about. Afterwards, I will talk about the principles underlying our research. Then I will present some results. And at the end, I hope I got some time for some interdisciplinary discourse, because the fields are pretty overlapping. So there are connections to many areas within science, like robotics, quantum computing, and we will talk about that at the end of the talk, all right? So first of all, we have a really interesting program at the University of Plymouth, which is called Cognovo. And Cognovo comes from cognition, obviously thinking, and novo for novelty. And we have 25 students from about 13 countries who are all coming from different disciplines, like computer science, neuroscience, robotics, even some people from the arts. So it's interesting from that perspective, because normally academia is subdivided into disciplines and they don't communicate much with each other. This is the truly interdisciplinary program. And like I said, Cognovo means novel thinking, and I think quantum cognition fits very nicely into that framework, because it combines ideas from different fields and tries to develop novel theories, which are basically combining disciplines, all right? I'm just coming from India. At the moment, I'm conducting some experimental work at the University of Jaipur in Rajasthan, and we are basically investigating principles from quantum cognition in auditory perception. But the talk now will focus on experiments are conducted at the University of Plymouth in the UK, where we focus on visual perception as described in the abstract. Okay, so this is a famous quote by Niels Bohr. Anyone who has not been shocked by quantum physics has not understood it, because the implications which are derived from the findings of quantum physics are actually quite far-reaching, and if one contemplates the ramifications of these findings, one really is let down deep into the rabbit hole, so to say. And there are many quotes like this, but this actually summarizes it very concisely. So our thinking, let's begin with a philosophical discourse, okay? Long time ago, Bishop George Berkeley was asking the question, what is mind? And he answered it, no matter. And what is matter? Never mind. So it's kind of a conundrum, basically. Yeah? You can think about it for a long time. At the moment, neuroscience is basically based on the assumption that mind emerges from matter. So there is a material, mechanistic, underlying framework. It's basically reductionistic science. And from that material basis, somehow, magically, mind emerges. But one can obviously question that framework and argue that it's exactly the other way around, that matter might actually emerge from mind, as pointed out by Berkeley before. So it's kind of a tautological statement which one can flip around at random. First of all, I would like to introduce the concept of complementarity to you, because it's actually a key concept of quantum physics. Yeah, and the concept of complementarity actually evolved in psychology. So most of the time, psychologists try to imitate the hard sciences like physics and biology, but in this case, it's the other way around. So in this case, Edgar Rubin, a famous Danish psychologist, basically came up with the idea of the Rubin's face, which you can see on the right hand. I will show it in full size later on. And he was actually a close friend of Niels Bohr. So they had a lot of discussions, probably a couple of beers together. And Niels Bohr was introduced to the concept of complementarity by Edgar Rubin, and he basically transferred that concept into physics. So to make a long story short, in this case, psychologists actually inspired physicists, and that led to the development of the complementarity principle within physics. So this is the famous Rubin's face, and as you can see, it's a very powerful visual illusion, between foreground and background. So we call this in cognitive psychology an ambiguous stimuli. It's also called bistable perception, because you can basically flip between two different interpretations of the same visual stimuli. So it's a pretty powerful visual illusion, as you can see. All right. Let's get this. Okay. So I just keep talking because my PowerPoint is just auto saving. So this principle of complementarity is closely related to the principle of superposition. So once again, we have one stimuli, but there are two different interpretations superimposed in the same stimuli. So the principle of superposition means there is one stimuli, but two interpretations are available at the same time, and you can basically switch between both interpretations. There is a specific switching rate which can be measured using different methods. And let me just go into full screen again. And the concept of superposition is well known in quantum physics, obviously. And I would like to make the difference between classical sequential models and quantum models very clear to you. So in classical probability theory, you're assuming that you're either in state A or in state B, and these states can alternate in a sequence, okay? But you can't be in state A and state B simultaneously. It's an either-or thing, okay? It's mutually exclusive. So if you look at the first sequence, I don't know if it's clearly visible to you, the projector is not the best, you can see that the sequence goes like 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, and it's alternating, okay? This is a classical sequential model. It's also called a Markov chain. These are complicated terms, but all it means is that 1 and 0 cannot exist at the same time. They can only exist in a sequential manner. The quantum probability model, as it has been developed by the famous physicist Erwin Schrödinger, has a different property. The 0 and the 1 can basically coexist at the same time. So the main difference is the superposition property. In this model, you have a temporal sequence again, and the interpretations or the states can coexist simultaneously. And it's just when an observer is basically interacting with the system that the so-called wave function, I will explain later, collapses and the state becomes either a zero or a one. So to make this very clear to you, if I ask you how do you like the talk so far, you might be ambiguous, okay? So you're in a superpositional state because between I like it or I don't like it. But once I ask the question, once I take the measurement, your uncertainty collapses into either I like it or I don't like it. So it's basically the measurement which creates your attitude towards the talk. It wasn't existent in a dichotomous fashion beforehand. So that's the main difference between a classical probability model and a quantum probability model. So like I said before, this is called the wave collapse function, because before you take the measurement, it's just the probability distribution. But once you take the measurement, the probability function collapses in a discrete state. Like I said, this has been formulated by Erwin Schrödinger as one of the basic equations of quantum physics, basically, okay? So let me now transfer these principles we discussed to the visual domain. And you might be familiar with the Necker cube. So in this visual example, there is no cube, but your visual system is constructing the cube, okay? At the same time, you can switch between two different interpretations of the visual stimuli, which are superimposed. So it's a stage-wise process. First of all, your visual system is constructing a cube where there is no cube, and then your visual system is basically flipping between two different interpretations. What this shows us is that visual perception is not actually reading out reality as it exists objectively, but it's a highly constructive process, okay? And in this example, there are two processes. which are constructed by your visual system. This is a well-known principle of Gestalt psychology. Our visual system is highly constructive in nature, and it looks for regularities, okay? And now you can actually, I just described the quantum probability model as opposed to the classical probability model. You can transfer these principles to the Necker cube. So let's assume we denote this interpretation of the Necker cube with a zero and this interpretation with a one. So there are two states which are existing simultaneously. One is zero and one is one. And it's your visual system which is constantly flipping between these states. So if you observe the cube, you might be able to flip between the two different percepts if you look at the cube for a couple of seconds, all right? So the question is, where are these states when you're not looking? It's you who's actually creating the interpretation of the percept. It has not been, it wasn't existing before you were looking at it, all right? So, this is quite interesting in another context as well. I don't know how many of you are physicists in this room. Okay, so you heard about the quantum Zeno effect before? Excellent, excellent. So the quantum Zeno effect is actually an example where the observation of a particle prevents that particle from decaying. So if the researcher is actually sampling at a very high frequency, a particle which would usually decay becomes stable just by observing it, okay? And this principle has actually been formulated by a Greek philosopher 2,000 years ago, and his name is Zeno. And this quantum Zeno effect, like I said, is termed after his idea. And Harald Achtmasbacher, he's a German physicist, transferred that quantum Zeno effect to the Necker cube. So he was arguing, if you observe the Necker cube with a very high sampling frequency, there will be no switch between the two coexisting possibilities, okay? So if you would look at that cube, let's say 50 times per second, continuously over 1 minute, there would be no switch. It's just the low sampling frequency rate which allows for the switch between the two percepts, all right? And he also formulated a mathematical model which basically describes the quantum dynamics which are the basis of this bistable perception phenomenon. It's quite dense mathematics. So the quantum Zeno paradox goes like this. If you shoot an arrow, let's say I shoot an arrow at the back of the wall, and I would be sampling the position of the arrow with a high frequency rate. Let's say I take 1,000 measurements of its position. In principle, the arrow should not move, because the more often I measure its position, the lower the movement becomes. And that's exactly the same which is true for the particle in quantum physics, and it's also true for the visual percept of the Necker cube. So that's the Zeno paradox. It has been discussed by Alan Turing. Alan Turing, for those who don't know, is one of the most famous computer scientists and mathematicians. So basically, to make a long story short, very frequent sampling prevents motion, which is a paradox actually in itself, all right? So let me summarize. Visual perception is a very constructive process. Superposition is observable in ambiguous figures, like the bistable percepts we were just seeing, and quantum dynamics can possibly help us to explain these phenomena. Okay, only 5 minutes left. So let me give you a real-world example of quantum order effects, all right? So they did a huge Gallup poll in the US where they asked 1,000 participants, is Clinton honest or is Gore honest, okay? And another group was asked exactly the same questions, but in a reverse order, all right? So the interesting part is that the question order completely changed the results. So if you ask Clinton first and then Gore, the statistics look like this. And if you ask exactly the same questions in a different order, you get completely different results. So you can manipulate the outcome of elections and other questionnaires, whatever you think about, by just manipulating the question order. And there are actually quantum models which are able to explain these phenomena in a very precise way, and they're much better than the usual classical probability models, which are actually used all over the place, because most of the cognitive sciences and the neighboring disciplines are purely based on classical probability theory. Quantum probability theory is usually not used in any of these fields. And I think it's slowly changing because these models are, from a statistical point of view, much more powerful in order to explain these phenomena, all right? So they even did meta-analytic studies. Meta-analyses are studies where you basically collect evidence from many sources and combine them into one big data set in order to draw conclusions which are much more powerful than the conclusions drawn from one study. And they could show that the goodness of fit index, it's a statistical measure of how good the data actually fits your model, is very close with the quantum model but deviates significantly from the classical probability model, all right? So let me skip this because I'm a little bit under time pressure. So this is a geometric visualization of a quantum model. So quantum model basically uses multidimensional Hilbert space in order to model these processes. I'm going to skip this. So let me give you a very quick introduction to the roots of Western psychology. So what most people don't know is that psychophysics was one of the first disciplines of psychology. And psychophysics, interestingly, also very relevant to this conference, is actually investigating the relationship between the observer and the observed. It investigates the relationship between the physical reality and the mental reality. And Wilhelm Wundt, one of the most famous psychologists, established the first experimental laboratory in Leipzig where they investigated these psychophysical processes, all right? So psychophysics is also the most precise branch of psychology because it's able to describe our perceptual processes in a very precise quantitative manner. So there are specific mathematical laws which describe the relationship between your perception and what's going on in the outside world. So if people argue psychology is a soft science, it's definitely not the case for psychophysics because it's a highly quantitative, descriptive way to deal with experience, all right? So the visual system is one of the best studied processes in neuroscience. We know a lot about how the retina works. We know all about the rods, the cones, the photoreceptors in the retina. We know about the visual pathways, the geniculate nucleus, the visual cortex, and its different departments. So by investigating visual perception from a quantum cognition point of view, we can actually test these theories in a very precise manner. All right, that's why our research focused on that. And basically, our experimental findings, in a nutshell, show that visual perception follows these quantum principles and that it's incongruent with the classical probability models, okay? Obviously, we just run a series of experiments and one cannot generalize across domains, but at least one could argue that we can conclude tentatively that these findings point into the direction that quantum probability models should be incorporated into cognitive psychology in order to explain these phenomena. So I'm going to skip all of this. Quantum models are also used in artificial intelligence. Google has a new lab which is basically focusing on quantum machine learning. And I think I have to end this. So this is a nice artwork which is basically showing multidimensional Hilbert space. We can only visualize three dimensions, but sometimes art helps us to conceptualize these higher dimensions of reality. And this artwork has actually been realized with a very, very short iterative C++ code snippet. So mathematics and art can go hand in hand to help us to conceptualize these very abstract notions like multidimensional space. Thank you very much for your attention. I'm happy to take questions if there is time left.